This is Hemet.
And Jessica.
And you're listening to the Friendly Atheist Podcast. Please go to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast to support the show, get ad-free episodes, and get bonus exclusive episodes.
Yeah, hear me being more like off-kilter than I normally am. Bring yes. in those episodes.
When I listen to you, I think kiltered.
You know, I get that a lot. That's so funny. People are like, Jess, you're really kiltered today. It's great.
Do you want to start with the most disturbing story that we have seen in a while?
Is it the one I care about
yes,
deeply?
Yes, it okay. is. Okay, here's the backstory, because yeah. I was shocked to learn just the backstory of this thing. In Oklahoma, the current law says corporal punishment is legal in schools. You can
like
spank
public schools.
Public
right?
schools. Teachers can spank, hit, paddle.
So you
kids.
Send your kindergartner off to school thinking yep. they're going to learn like 2 + 2 = 6.
Yeah.
You know, like kids do.
Yeah.
And instead, they're just like beating the shit out of your kids.
They could. I'm sure there are some rules in there, but the bottom line is it's a legal thing in Oklahoma and it hasn't been
they're
undone.
Physically punishing children.
Theoretically, it is legal to do so.
Okay. So theoretically, but do we have evidence of this actually happening?
I do have some evidence
no.
of it happening. This is not just a hypothetical. Where's the number? Here we go. Oklahoma educators reported using physical discipline 3,968 times during the 2017-18 school year, according to the most recent federal data available.
3,600 times.
Almost 4,000 times, and that happened at more than 1,800 Oklahoma no. schools. That's okay. from 5 years ago.
So I'm not sure people who listen to this necessarily know, like, who we are, I guess. So my I have, like, 17 jobs because I'm a millennial, but one of my jobs is I work for a therapeutic writing center, and we specialize in kids with special needs, kids and adults with special needs. And so I understand, because I do it every day, the deep patience it requires to work with kids like this. And I think anybody who takes that on is brave and noble. What I have learned is that, like, hitting disabled children.
We're not there yet.
Oh, sorry. I'm so sorry. I jumped ahead. Anyway, I guess working with special needs kids and adults, it takes a lot of patience. So that's what I will say.
Here's where we get to this new bill. Mm. This is, I should say, House Bill 1028. It's sponsored by a Republican, John Talley.
Oklahoma, you said?
Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And basically he said, look, there is an exemption in the law, the corporal punishment law, that says you can't hit kids with, quote, the most significant cognitive disabilities. The most significant cognitive disabilities.
Which is not a clinical term. So correct me if I'm wrong, is it just some, like, old white dudes in Congress making bullshit up about how
I don't know
shit
how the
works?
State legislature here, whenever they passed the law with the exemption,
I just don't believe these people have a lot of experience
it.
With disabled
but you're right.
humans.
Like, how do you define most significant?
This is what I'm saying.
They didn't define it in the law, but it means teachers can theoretically spank kids, paddle kids, hit them however you feel. However, a handful of students who they define as the most significant cognitively disabled are off limits. Okay, whatever. Like, that's a horrible exemption.
Some might say
that's
that.
A good exemption to a horrible law.
Right.
But also, it leaves a lot of students vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
So, this Republican, John Talley, said, I would like to not overturn corporal punishment, which would have been the right answer.
Correct.
But he said, let me broaden the exemption, because he's basically asking what you're asking, which is, how do we define, you know, most significant cognitive disability? He said, why don't we just say, if you have any sort of IEP, if you have any sort of individualized education program, you're considered you have some sort of disability, and the school has paperwork that signifies that you have any disability, you're off limits.
But does this only apply to minors?
Yeah, I mean, this is public
this
schools,
is
basically
minors.
Saying teachers
yes, you did say that.
cannot use corporal punishment, he said, under this bill, you couldn't do it to any student with any disability. Uh-huh. Just saying, let's broaden that exemption so that it covers more kids who are exempt from being hit. I mean, to be clear,
everybody
should be exempt from that. But he's saying, look, here's an easy move for all of us. Let's make sure anyone with a disability is exempt. And another Republican state representative, Anthony Moore, said, I'm going to co-sponsor this bill. Uh-huh. And he basically said he thought this would be an easy vote. He said, quote, there's going to be nobody who's for corporal punishment on students with disabilities, said.
I bet he's severely mistaken about the state of his state.
Yeah. I don't think he realized that he is a Republican in Oklahoma.
Mm.
Because
here's
the thing. They were going to vote on this bill in the state house and then pass it over. But other Republicans started saying, wait, let's think about
what
we're doing.
You're going to take away my God-given right to beat the shit out of a kid who doesn't understand what's going on.
Exactly.
How dare you?
And again, these two Republicans who co-sponsored the bill thought, come on, even Republicans are going to get on board with this.
I'm obsessed with the fact that Republicans kicked this off. This is very fun for me.
They do not understand their own party. So,
truly.
State Representative Jim Olson, he got on the floor of the House right before they were going to take a vote
on this matter. The hero Jim Olson?
Exactly.
Oh, he's so brave.
Yes.
I can't wait.
He got on the floor of the House and he's basically making an argument for why we don't need to broaden this exemption at all.
Sure.
And I'm going to play a clip for you. It's about a minute long, and it's his defense of why we should keep corporal punishment available as an option for as many students as possible. Here's this clip.
Okay.
You know, several scriptures could be read here. Let me just read just one. Proverbs 29, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. So that would seem to endorse the use of corporal punishment.
What?
So how would you reconcile this bill with Scripture's counsel on this matter?
I would say that this is limited to special needs children's.
I'm going to let you have one more question and then you have to get back in the queue, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for your tolerance. On what basis would we automatically assume? Now, I'm sure there are some cases where capacity is so limited they may not understand the rules and expectations. But on what basis would we automatically conclude that a special needs child should not get corporal punishment?
Because in this bill it says that these are students that are classified as IDEA special needs students.
So let me recap what he just did there. What he said is the Bible basically says spare the rod, spoil the child. Right. You have to hit kids. It's the biblical thing to do.
Which
why
my understanding
are we
is
exempting?
That's a misunderstanding of a specific thing that says you need to discipline kids does not necessarily mean you need to physically hit them.
Yes,
that's
that is one interpretation of that
idea. A high school math
idea.
Teacher I had who's real mad when I posted about this on my Facebook wall.
So he's saying the Bible says we're allowed to discipline kids. And then he asked after that to the sponsor of the bill, like, how do you get to decide who is exempt from this rule? And what that legislator said is, well, there's paperwork involved. If your child has a disability,
sure,
like the teachers know about it. How do the teachers know about it? Because there's paperwork involved. So we would know exactly who's exempt from this bill. So don't let that be a thing. But
right.
Basically, Jim Olson said, but the Bible says we can hit kids. So why can't we hit the kids?
And he challenges him. He says, how do you say, right? He says, how do you reconcile whatever you're saying with scripture?
At
which is
Olson is saying that, saying, right, how does your law comport with what my interpretation of the Bible
and
is?
And guess what? It fucking doesn't.
Yeah. It doesn't. It shouldn't have to. Who cares?
Yeah.
I will say kudos to the Tulsa World newspaper because in their article about what just transpired, they included this line. Olson did not turn to Deuteronomy chapter 21, verses 18 to 21, which is usually translated as God ordering that stubborn and rebellious sons be stoned to death.
Old Deuteronomy.
Basically
lived
saying,
a long
oh,
time.
You're choosing the spare the rod section as justification for why we should beat kids, but you're ignoring the one about murdering them.
I am just so obsessed with this kind of shit of like, the Bible says I can beat children, and how fucking dare you tell me that? Like, I think that's the thing that kind of blows my mind about Christianity and specifically Christians in power is that they make a very obvious choice, right? They decide, do I want to follow Jesus in so much that he said, feed the poor, support sex workers, we're all doing our best, everyone deserves care? Or do I cherry pick a few things out of the Bible and be like, oh, all of that shit Jesus says doesn't matter if you've ever touched a boy's penis with your penis? That's not how gay sex
works.
Great,
now
I'm
we are
stupid.
Banned from all the platforms.
Stop telling me I'm getting us demonetized. Uh-huh. I'm the only one who makes this money. Question mark?
So, I should also point out,
I'm dragging on your coattails.
There you go.
There it is.
So, the American Academy of Pediatrics actually has said repeatedly, like, they want to ban any form of physical discipline in school against children, I should say. Why? Because there's plenty of evidence showing it does harm in the long term. Surprise.
Did you? You're
and Olson, they brought this up. And what did Jimmy Olson say? He said, God's counsel is higher than the American Academy of Pediatrics. God's word is higher than all the so-called experts.
So is there any other example of Christians just fucking running roughshod over the world?
Every example is an example of that.
But this is such a strong one of truly, it's not even couched in anything. It's just them saying like, hey, kids with autism are hard to deal with, and it's much easier for me to beat the shit out of them into submission than
that's
it is
a different
for
Republican. I'll get to him in a second.
It sounds like it's the same fucking Republican, heavens.
Yeah. So another guy in
fighting
the legislature
to beat kids with special needs. Let's everybody simmer in His that for name, a hot second.
Another legislator, Randy Randleman. There's a name for you. He
Go
said,
fuck yourself. Did you just say Randy Randleman to me and not think I have a five-minute bit to do about that?
He's a child psychologist. And what he said on the floor, I don't have a clip of this, but what he said is basically spanking is almost always inappropriate.
Except.
But, yeah. And what he said is teachers need the threat of corporal punishment to maintain classroom order. He said, you can't touch me. I hear that over and over. I don't want to hear that in school. Like, kids use that as an excuse to taunt their teachers. And he said teachers basically need to have the threat to hurt special needs kids.
Just
to be clear, as someone who was in the classroom for several years, I'm just telling you, if your classroom is so chaotic that physical discipline is your only solution, you shouldn't be a teacher.
Did you ever, so you're a little bit older than me, but not much. Mm-hmm. I never had any kind of hint of corporeal punishment in my entire life.
From my parents, yeah, but not from school.
No. My parents, yes, but not from, like, the school is what I'm asking.
Yeah,
okay.
No, I can't even
that
imagine any of my teachers
like,
doing that.
That 1960s to me, which I know is really naive. But
feels
like,
very 1860s.
I mean,
and
actually,
that is what they would like to go back to. So after all this, and again, let me reiterate, this is a Republican legislative bill to, like, expand the exemptions here. They thought Republicans would go along with it. And, of course, all the Democrats were going to go
Does
along with
blow
it.
Blow your mind the things they're going to, the hills they're going to die on is, like, nothing is so important to me as a kid with a Down syndrome getting the shit beat out of them in their classroom. Like,
by a teacher. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just
Jesus
horrific.
Christ.
Their religion is giving them license to do the worst things imaginable. And, again, all these people, to paraphrase a line, I didn't come up with this, but these are people who basically act like they put their hand on a constitution and swore to uphold the Bible.
Sure.
It's supposed to be the other way around.
Yeah, that's fair.
So here's what happened. After all, the couple of those Republicans speak out and say, like, well, the Bible says we could hit kids. And the other guy says, well, teachers need to be able to threaten their kids because this is Oklahoma. The vote was 45-43 in favor of broadening that exemption. And that sounds like a good thing. I mean, it sounds like it passed. But here's the thing. There's 101 members of the state house. So for any bill to pass, you need 51 votes.
They need a majority.
Even though they had more than the other side, they didn't have 51. I should say 13 members of the house were gone that day. So like, it's possible they could bring this bill up again.
They had really important shit to do that is more important than defending, I want to be clear, students who have special needs who are being beaten by their teachers. They're like, oh my God, I never get this tea time.
Of those 13, I think 3 are Democrat and 10 were Republican. So that means even if every Democrat supports this bill, they're still going to need a few more Republicans to join with them on it. And the fact is, I don't know if they're going to be able to do that because a lot of the people are like, well, if this seems to go against the Bible, I don't know. There is a Democratic lawmaker in Oklahoma. His name is Forrest Bennett, and he wrote, "Good morning from the Oklahoma House Chamber, where a pastor and a psychiatrist, who are also legislators, are fighting against a bill that would ban corporal punishment for students with special needs. It's 2023 outside. It's 1880 in here."
Yeah, dude.
Which, by the way, it's 1880 in here should really be Oklahoma's motto.
It's pretty funny. I always like to bring this up when we talk about shit like this, of like, children need to be physically punished to understand things. And I maybe this is trite, but this is a thing I really need to say, is I work with horses. I train horses for a living. They weigh around 1,000 pounds on average. I've never hit one of my horses. I've never physically abused any one of my horses. Because if you work with any creature, whether that's human or not, you understand that hitting the shit out of something is not the best way to quote unquote train them. So when I hear that a teacher cannot deal with a kid with special needs without like fucking hitting them, to me, that says this person lacks empathy. This person doesn't understand how human beings work, and that this person thinks less of their students than I do of my horses.
Yeah. We've said this before as on this show talking about the same topic, but if you're response to anything like this, even setting aside the students with special needs side of this whole thing, if your thing is, well, I got hit as a child and I turned out just fine, so I support this. No, clearly
you did not turn out just fine. Because you think it's important to hit children.
Yeah. And I should point out, as I'm sure a lot of listeners are thinking right now too, like hitting kids and or spanking them or paddling them or whatever language you want to use has been a longtime core belief among fundamentalist Christians. There's a couple, Michael and Debbie Pearl, who wrote an infamous guide to faith-based abuse called To Train Up a Child.
I remember To Train Up a Child.
That is a book that gets brought up in conservative circles still, even though parents who have used their methods have been jailed, have been arrested for the abuse that they caused. And the defense from these people is always like, well, we didn't say beat them. You're not supposed to do it like that hard.
Supposed to strike them and surprise them. Like, what?
Like, they want to paddle on your butt, but like not to leave a mark except to hurt them. Otherwise, they won't feel it. Like,
they
it's
have
such
to
a
hurt
weird
them,
rule
but they
book.
Can't get caught hurting them. So they know that it's not okay.
And just to be clear, this book says you should physically discipline kids as young as 6 months. That's what the book says.
God.
With, quote, the same principles the Amish use to train their stubborn mules.
Okay, actually, you know what's wild is we have a horse at our barn that was brought up by the Amish, and he is scared a lot.
Yeah, well.
He was clearly beaten into submission, and so let's not maybe use the Amish as our benchmark for good raising up of animals or humans. Wait, so, okay.
I'll summarize the story for you here.
Yeah, that's fine. Do it.
Jim Olson, who is a Sunday school teacher who routinely cites the Bible to defend horrible policies, used his democratically elected power to help defeat a bill so that more vulnerable students could be hurt just a little more. And this is the sort of guy who thinks kids need protection from learning about systemic racism, but he wants to make sure teachers have the option to beat students with disabilities because he's Christian.
He's, if I had to wager a guess, I would say this man is a eugenicist. Because if he is like, we defo need to beat disabled kids, we definitely don't need to learn about anybody from any other races. All we have to do is...
Did you see the interview this week of the right-wing bigot who was on doing an interview on live TV, and she was ranting about like, blah, 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 woke something, something. And the interviewer is like, hey, can you just define that for me?
Woke?
Okay. And then there's like a 30-second pause on TV.
Love a pregnant pause.
That only included the words, this is going to go viral. Oh, no. Something like that.
The interviewee said
that? The interviewee who couldn't...
And what'd she say?
She made up some stupid definition.
And she knew.
She got called. She knew in real time, like, oh, no. Liberals are going to tear me apart.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
What do you think is... over time, what do you think is...
It's amazing
is,
they say woke with a hard R.
That's pretty funny, actually. What do you think has been more troublesome on society? Do you think it is this sort of spare the rod, spoil the child thing? Or do you think it is the don't have sex until you get married and you need to follow these...
Isn't it all part of the same package of I
want to
control your body?
That's not the question I'm
asking. I want to control your body, and therefore we're going to put in place any laws that allow me to have authority over your body. That's the Christian, the conservative Christian way here.
But the bodies they are trying to control are different bodies. There is a difference between I'm trying to make sure this, say, teenage girl doesn't like explore her sexuality,
right,
versus this kid with severe autism does not understand what you are asking them to do. They're both shitty. I guess
if you're asking me to compare, I don't know that I could. I don't know which one is worse.
I set you up for the worst possible conclusion.
But I think it is part of the same package where they think like the Bible gives me the authority to control you, your physical being. Mm. I get to dictate what happens to your body. It's part of the same package of everything they want to do. I want to control your mind. I want to control your body. That is what they do. And they don't just want to, they know they can't do it through influence because no one takes these people seriously except the very few scary people who do. But it's
and
like,
they
well,
don't
I
have additional
and
influence.
They're all in state legislatures. And it's like, well, let me use that power to make sure you can't get away with it. That's what's frightening to me.
I mean, it seems to me the more I learn about the shit we study and cults and things like that, it really is 100% down to like one dude or a group of people who want power. And that seems to be what it all is, from the Pope down to like the cult leader who had like literally two followers. They just want to be in charge.
And I do want to point out for that last story about the kids with disabilities, like the good guys, quote unquote, in that story are Republicans who wanted to broaden the exemption. But just to be clear, they still want corporal punishment. They're not trying to get rid of let's beat the kids. They're saying, well, let's beat the kids, but like, we'll say no to a handful more than we did before.
I have to wonder, though.
Those are the good guys in this story.
But is
that the Republican Party for you?
Is that a moment for Republicans of being like, oh, I thought we all agreed we shouldn't beat kids with special needs?
I quoted a guy who was one of the co-sponsors of the bill who said, you know, I thought Republicans would be on board with this. Like, there's going to be nobody who's for corporal punishment on students with disabilities.
Okay, I'm sorry, I forgot. Because the bill was
to Republicans.
But reduce corporal punishment.
Yeah,
and
for slightly
all
fewer kids.
That they got.
And he thought he could get enough Republicans to pass it. Well, after he said that, he's like, well, I was wrong. Said that to a newspaper about his fellow Republicans, which, welcome to my world.
At least he's acknowledging. These are the people I'm curious about. This, my dude here, who...
He's only 99% conservative.
I thought you were going to say he's only 90 years old, and I was like, well, fuck everything, I guess. But surely, like, at what point do you not get roped into the cult atmosphere of the GOP if you're this guy who says, no, I am not the part of the GOP that's just anti to destroy things.
I'm one of the good ones. I just want physical
things.
Abuse on most kids.
And of course. But what does this guy do going away from this? Because this man's internal monologue is, this was a no-lose situation. Nobody thinks that disabled kids should be beaten. And even conservative politicians, there's no way they are for this. And now he knows. Like, yeah. I'm just dying to know, like, I want to hear the conversation he had with his wife or therapist or dog or whatever.
It is
like,
possible this
I
bill.
I guess we are the baddies.
This bill could be brought up again when the full House is in session. So maybe it'll pass. I don't know. But again, the fact that it didn't have the votes it needed because 41, was it 41? Like how many of those? 43. I'm sorry.
So
43 Republicans said, no, I'm fine with beating kids who don't know what's going on necessarily.
Yeah, these people are fucking monsters, and I don't know why people continue to elect them to do literally anything.
Good luck to you, Oklahoma.
With spring finally here, hopefully you're getting together with friends, having those barbecues, and sharing a meal. And that means you should be thinking about ButcherBox. You can skip the grocery store knowing you have the food you trust and the food you chose in your freezer. I know that might sound strange coming from me since I'm vegetarian, but they have a high-quality veggie burger that I absolutely love. They have options for pescatarians, too. And if you eat everything, that's okay. The food from ButcherBox is high-quality, grass-fed, and free-range. Have peace of mind knowing there are no antibiotics or added hormones. Today, ButcherBox is giving our listeners free ground beef for life of your membership, plus an additional $20 off your first order. Use our link, butcherbox.com/friendly, and use code friendly to get free ground beef for life, plus $20 off your first box. That's butcherbox.com/friendly and code friendly.
Let me jump to this story, which when I saw the headline, which was, we have new survey results on what people think about various religious groups in the country.
From who?
I'm like, this is from the Pew Research Center.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, okay, I don't know what my prediction would be. Like, do people like atheists? Do people like evangelical Christians?
Well,
what's the answer?
Classically, people do not like atheists.
Right. And so the question is, like, how badly does that look like? On if you put assigned a number to it, favorability. Here's the question. What percent of U.S. adults have a favorable view or unfavorable view of each of the following groups?
Okay, before we dig into this, do you have any shit from prior? Like, I feel like historically atheists have died under this kind of scrutiny, right? But I presume you
don't
have that off the top of your dome.
You know what? I don't. And the reason is I think they've changed the wording of the question. So I can't do an apples comparison.
Okay.
So basically the question is like, if we ask you about Jewish people, do you have a very favorable opinion, somewhat favorable, somewhat unfavorable, very unfavorable, or neither? I don't have enough information to say. Those are your options.
Okay.
And it turns out that if you look at atheists specifically, the percentage of Americans who say, I have a favorable view, either very favorable or
can
somewhat favorable, you can guess.
25%.
Lower.
Fuck.
20% said we have a favorable view, which is like...
Explains why my coworkers don't like me very much, I guess.
Yes, that is the only reason. And then, asshole. What's the percentage who have an unfavorable view who actively said
25%.
Like, that is closer. 24%.
Okay.
So on average, like our net likability is -4%.
Yeah, we're not.
We're
doing
more unliked
great. Hey,
than liked.
Dave Silverman, can you backpedal so hard? You're not helping us.
I wish I could give one person credit for that. Like it's one dude dragging us down. But no, it's not just one dude.
We're
I would
just
venture.
A deeply dislikable
but
group.
But here's the thing. We're actually not the lowest on the totem pole. Let me add a couple more things.
Okay.
I said 20% have a favorable view of us. 24 have an unfavorable view. 55% have no opinion on us, which is, to me, the more shocking thing.
I dream of the day people have no opinion on me.
None whatsoever.
I would give everything I have for people to look at me and be like, yeah, that's fine.
Which I guess
that's
means
great. That's, great
that's 55% of people who haven't been persuaded one way or the other. Like, there's room
no,
for
I would
growth.
Argue, no. I think I would push back on that and say that it's people who don't care about religion Right? Maybe. Like, I feel like if you have your toe in religion, you have an opinion about atheists. But if you're somebody who just doesn't give a shit, I'm an atheist. Okay, dog. Right. Like, fine.
Well, here's some other things that are also interesting. First of all, we're not the ones with the biggest net unfavorability at -4.
Oh, boy.
Muslims do worse than us. They're at -5%.
Muslim. Sorry, gang.
But they're not the last ones either. Guess Wait. Which group has the most unfavorable views?
This is a U.S. poll?
Americans have a general unfavorability
Distrust.
Toward them. Yeah.
Worse and than I won't, with, Muslims.
I won't give away the answer, but only 15% say I have a favorable view, and 25% say I have an unfavorable view.
Is it pagans?
Mormons.
No shit.
Yeah.
Wait. Say those numbers again. 20% have...
25% of Americans say they have an unfavorable view of Mormons.
Okay.
Overall, they have an a net favorability of -10,
wow.
which is lowest on the list.
So that's fascinating to me because I feel like Mormonism is...
We beat the
is,
Mormons, everybody.
Yeah, congratulations,
Drink
team.
Up.
Yeah, cheers. Cheers
have,
to you.
Have some coffee.
I have worked
Warm
with Mormons
coffee.
More than I think any, besides Catholicism, any other group. And I feel like the reflection of Mormons is they're nice, they're hard workers, mm-hmm. they do what they have to do. It's very Book of Mormon, like they're always buttoned up. And
yeah, that's what surprised me too. I'm like, even if you don't get
yeah,
their religion.
Deeply racist and homophobic, but like if you meet an individual Mormon,
probably
he's going to have a sharp haircut, he's not going to drink coffee, and he's going to wear a tie probably,
right.
I assume.
And so that was surprising.
The sharp haircut's most important.
Who had the most favorable outlook? Like, who did people find the most favorable?
Black evangelicals.
No, there's only three of them, and the answer is no.
Tell me.
Jews. Everyone loves
fuck yourself.
Jews. 35% of Americans have a favorable view. Only, 6% had an unfavorable view.
I thought anti-Semitism was having a real comeback lately.
Well, I think this is what's interesting. I think you have a small group of very conservative religious people who are deeply anti-Semitic. And obviously Jewish people as a proportion of the American population is not a huge
very
percentage.
Very small percentage, what, like but, 10%?
But the anti-Semitic 13? Voices are super loud and very dangerous.
And specific is
but
the thing.
But overall, though... It's not there. And
yeah.
and honestly, maybe the fact that we have to have these conversations about anti-Semitism actually makes people more favorable. Like, I want to defend Jews.
That
I
they feel
want...
more victims than any.
Yeah.
Once again,
there's some
as
empathy,
for the 20th
if nothing
century.
Else.
Oh, God, that's
maybe,
so
maybe.
Interesting.
This is me just
of course.
Trying
well,
to make sense of these numbers.
Nobody's smarter than you and me, so
damn
I don't know
right.
what else they could
So here's what else we learned from this poll.
Okay.
When it comes to atheists, the question is, okay, here's what's unfair about that whole ranking thing.
Okay.
It's that, well, atheists are a small percentage of the population, and like Christians, Protestants, Catholics are like a huge proportion of Americans.
Yeah,
so if we're asking Americans what they think about these various groups, Christians have this inherent edge because they're making up a bigger proportion of the sample size. If
okay.
you ask 100 Americans,
so
what do you think?
So what you're saying is Christians tend to be fine with Jewish people?
I'm
and
saying Christians are going to say, well, my people are fine. Other Christians are fine, even if I disagree with the specifics.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So it's like, well, if the whole sample is pretty much Christians, they're going to rank Christians better than groups that they deem non-Christian. Maybe. So Pew also broke this down of like, let's see what Protestants said or evangelicals said about all these groups, except for themselves.
Okay.
Let's see what atheists said about all these groups, except for other atheists. And here's where it gets interesting.
I don't like other atheists.
Yeah, well, join the club. But here's what they found here. Like, if you look at the how did everyone think about atheists,
uh-huh.
It won't surprise you that agnostics love us.
Of course.
Net
because
favorability
we're their
of
big brother.
Yeah. Net favorability of +45.
Okay.
Like, they way more like us than dislike us.
Jealous.
People who are just nuns, like the Marilyn, what's her name? Marianne Williamsons.
Oh, yeah.
Marianne Williamsons of the world are like the +13. okay, not bad. Jews love us. We're plus 19 among Jews.
We're basically the same.
Who hates us the most? Yeah. Evangelicals have a net favorability of us of negative 40. They really dislike us. And it's mutual because atheists, what do atheists think about evangelicals?
Don't care for them.
Atheists, when looking at how we feel about evangelicals, negative 76%.
So not to brag, we hate them more than they hate us.
That is correct.
Good for us. I feel like I'm in high school right now. They're the bad guys.
This also amused me. What do atheists say about Mormons? Negative 55. We're not fans.
No.
Catholics, negative 49%. We're not fans.
I would rank Catholics worse than... don't dig into that, Jessica. You don't like it.
Yeah. Jews? We like Jews. Yeah. Atheists love Jews. Plus 13. Not? Plus 13.
They're a chill people.
So here's what's interesting. Mormons like everybody else.
Besides us.
No, including us. They like us the least.
Mormons,
but they still
are a
like us.
Positive group.
Mormons.
Unless
have
they go to one of their weddings.
Mormons have a bigger positive favorability. They have a higher like for us than dislike of us. Plus 6 is the differential.
Okay.
Now, I will say Mormons, when it comes to evangelical Christians, it's plus 43. When it comes to Jews, it's plus 58.
So
when it comes
to
atheists, it's plus 6. So they like us the least, but they still like us more than dislike us. So that's something.
This
Yay,
is
Mormons.
Like if Kenneth from 30 Rock was ranking people, and he's like, I hate most of these people, but the worst I can think of is plus 6.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
I hate them.
So that's interesting. But then, so I asked the Pew Research Center, like, it wasn't in their original report. I'm like, do you have a breakdown by age? Because I'm very curious.
Okay.
And they did give me a breakdown by age. And here's what I got from them. If you ask people 65 or older, all Americans now, 65 or older, what do you think of atheists? Net favorability, negative 24.
Rough.
Not fans of us, only 9% of people above 65 have a favorable opinion of atheists. 33% have an unfavorable
view. And genuinely,
view.
I think the people who are all over 60 or whatever, it's just my dad's friends who like to talk to me at a bar.
So it's negative 24 from people 65 and up.
Shit.
What happens when you ask people under 30? All of a sudden, we jump to plus 11.
Oh!
When it comes to atheists,
okay.
28% of them have a favorable view of atheists. Only 17 have an unfavorable view. So the point is, like, we actually, when it comes to who do you view favorably, 18 to 29-year-olds, Jews are at 29%, atheists are at 28%.
Yeah,
everyone else is lower than
no
us.
No shit. Wait. Everybody?
Every other group.
Like Christianity, religion.
Mainline Protestants.
Really?
Only plus 17. Catholics plus 20. Muslims plus 26. Much higher than I thought they would get.
Interesting.
And I was trying to figure out, because Pew doesn't do this, but I'm trying to figure out, like, why is it that younger people, like, have a better opinion of atheists and Muslims and Jews than all these other groups? Yes, you are raising your hand on a podcast.
I think young people tend to be more anti-authoritarian. That's my guess, is that they see Christianity, specifically evangelical Christianity, as the, like, capital B big bad, right? Like, they're the ones who are running everything and making everything worse. And so I think in, not reflection, but, like, in response to that, they're like, no, fuck those guys. We're into atheists. We're into Jews. We're into Muslims. We're into the people who are not, like, trying to genuinely take over our culture.
I think that's what it is. And I think it's the fact that these religions, by and large, these days, especially evangelicals, are known more for their politics than anything about their religious beliefs.
100%.
So evangelical is shorthand for the Republicans who want to take away your rights, your civil rights, your bodily rights, your autonomy, all that stuff. And they want nothing to do with that. I mean, I think if you say, you know, given their retrograde views on women, their bigoted views on LGBTQ people, the Republican Party in general, young people have been screwed over by Republicans / conservative white evangelicals for decades now.
And blamed for our failure. It's our fault that we had the wrong, whatever, college major, and not that they fucked us over as hard as they could during the Reagan administration.
And so this is the thing. Like, young people grew up and they knew atheists, by and large, are ones fighting for religious equality, religious freedom. Mm-hmm. If you know anything about us, which apparently most people don't. But if you know anything, it's like, well, what do I know about atheists? Well, a lot of people I know are fed up with organized religion, too. And if you see atheists fighting about anything on TV, in newspapers, whatever, it's usually in defense of religious freedom. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you see a Catholic bishop or you see an evangelical leader, it's saying, let me tell you why we want to stop women from having rights.
And
let
why
me...
we're correct. Everybody else is wrong.
And
it's terrible.
Know how to sniff out bullshit. So good on that. I mean, that gives me some hope for the future. And there's one other thing that caught my attention from this particular Pew Research Center survey, which is that when it came to, they asked people, do you know someone who is blank? Like, do you know someone who's Catholic?
Oh, interesting.
And so compared to just 3 years ago, Catholics, 3 years ago, 91% of people said, I know someone who's Catholic. Sure. Now it's down to 88%. A little,
that's not a,
not
huge,
a huge drop. By and large, most people, it actually went down. Maybe because we're not hanging out with people in general as much anymore.
Yeah, that
but
would be what I would
say. Atheists was the one group that had a big jump from 3 years ago, from 65% of Americans saying they know someone who's atheist to 71%. And again, this has been a long-term thing, not just for LGBTQ people in that movement, but for us as well, which is when you know someone who's gay, it's a lot harder to demonize being gay. It's a lot harder to demonize same-sex marriage.
I mean, this
all that
is
sort
what
of
I've
stuff.
Been saying for 1,000 years.
Right? It's also true of trans people. If you know someone who's trans, then you would probably change how you talk about
classic,
trans people.
This is classic, like, mid-aughts GOP bullshit of, oh, my son just came out as gay, and now I realize, oh, gay people are human beings.
And to be fair, like, that's Barack Obama's excuse for supporting same-sex marriage. Well, I know a couple who is gay, and I don't
which
know.
Which is fair, but
whatever.
He was working in the system.
And as more people know people who are atheists, which, by the way, if you're younger, if you're in a bigger high school, if you're in a bigger college, odds are you can't really swing your arms in the hallway without hitting someone who's non-religious or skeptical of religion. I don't care what their label is, but you're bound to know someone who's atheist, and you probably like that person. They're probably in your friend group at some point.
I mean, most of my coworkers know what I do, mostly because they know that I don't get paid enough to make a living off of working at the barn.
Patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast
this is my job, and I can't think of anybody who has ever, like, treated me weird. Like, most people are like, oh my God, my daughter will love your podcast.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, so we have a long way to go as atheists if we want to win over hearts and minds of most Americans.
Yeah, but we can go pretty far by not being dicks.
That goes a long way. And the bottom line is we're still on the upswing, and a lot of that is self-inflicted wounds from religious conservatives who keep making their religion look worse and worse.
Sure.
And the more they double down on, like, waging wars on vulnerable people and the taking always the least popular policy decisions, all while voting for extremists and wannabe dictators from Florida, like, whatever goodwill they earned, like, this is what's surprising about the Mormon thing. Like you said, if you know a Mormon, it's probably they're super nice,
definitely, like, cleaned up your yard for you without asking.
And that's the reputation they were coasting on for a long time. And these days, if you follow the news to the point where you hear about Mormons in the news, think about the stories you've been hearing. And they're not, I don't think any of this is unfair. It's about covering up sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. It's about being anti-gay, going back to, like, Prop 8 and fighting against that stuff. It is the racism that has been talked about, not just exposed, it's been exposed for a while, but the inherent racism of the Mormon church. Mm-hmm. And a lot of ex-Mormons speaking out and saying they want to leave this sect. Like, all of that stuff is happening. So whatever goodwill they have earned to the point where you can make a musical that actually they don't hate, because you are ultimately saying we have a good thing going here.
That musical fucking owns Bones.
They they still have a negative reputation because people are seeing through the facade. And that's happening down the line. Catholics, I mean, again, they've had a bad reputation for a long time, but that was built off of, like, a lot of people would have graduated from Catholic schools or Catholic universities. And, like, the good people you know go to church every week. And now it's like, what do I think about the Catholic Church? Well, I have another story in a little bit about another one going bankrupt because of sexual abuse. Mm. So, like, there's the Catholic Church for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least if you hate atheists, it's probably because you hate a couple people.
Yeah, and we, I mean, and also we don't have a collective in the way that any church does, right? Like, because you and I can sit here and shit on Richard Dawkins for being transphobic. That doesn't.
And that's the end of the sentence.
Yeah. That's truly it. Okay, let's keep grinding.
Sure. Let's talk about this lawsuit coming out of South Carolina. This is. I was shocked to see this, and then the more I read about it, I'm like, nope, that tracks.
Oh, God.
This is a lawsuit from a teenage girl in South Carolina. She's suing her school district, saying she was physically assaulted by a teacher for not saying the Pledge of Allegiance.
Oh, God.
And their lawyer went public with this story, and, I mean, I've had a chance to read the lawsuit, look at the video they actually posted about this stuff. I mean, there's a lot of information.
Can I come look at it, or is this not a...
It's not worth watching, because it's hard to make out. You can just kind of see fuzzy specters.
Okay.
But I'll tell you what the video said. Here's the story. 15-year-old freshman. Her name is Marissa Barnwell. She's a black girl. She's an honor roll student at River Bluff High School.
This is South Carolina, you said?
Yep. She was walking to class after Thanksgiving last year. It was her birthday, coincidentally. But basically, she's walking in the hallway. The intercom system begins the Pledge of Allegiance. They do it every day. That's not unusual. A lot of schools do that sort of thing. Now, South Carolina law, just for the record, says every school has to say the pledge.
But South Carolina has no other problems. All they need to do is enforce saying the pledge.
They say schools have to say the pledge. But the law also says students don't have to participate. They can't be penalized for not participating. They can leave the classroom, remain silent and seated, whatever they want. Like, good. I mean, that's what the law should say. They shouldn't have the pledge, but whatever. If they do, those are the exemptions you need. Marissa wasn't in the classroom. She was walking in the hallway when these announcements were being played. And so she just kept walking. She was going to class, right? According to the surveillance video from the school, which their lawyer has made public, you could see her walking down the hall, and a teacher stops her. I can't hear in the video. I can't hear the sound. But according to Marissa, she said this teacher stopped her and basically...
Male, female teacher?
A female teacher stopped her, like pushed her against the wall. Like, you need to say the pledge. According to Barnwell, she said, I was just in disbelief. You can hear me say in the video... I cannot hear her say this in the video. But she says, you can hear me say in the video, get your hands off of me. I was completely and utterly disrespected.
Jesus.
And that's what the video apparently shows.
Holy
She said she doesn't even know who that teacher was. Like, it
just
wasn't
a random.
It was a random adult in the school who worked there.
Do we know?
Yes,
who
we
she
do
was?
Know who that person was.
Did she teach?
Special education teacher.
You would think
that person is even more empathetic.
You motherfuckers make us all look bad.
Seriously. So, according to the lawsuit.
Oh, fuck me.
According to the lawsuit, this teacher violated.
White
she
teacher.
Was white
God
teacher.
Damn it!
Yep.
White people do better for fucking once. It's so tiring.
Yep. So you can't hear the audio in the clip that was played on a newspaper's website. And I did try to get another copy of the video from the lawyer. He did not respond to my emails.
Knows I'm upset.
Yes. So they had a press conference. Here's the rest of the story, though. This incident allegedly happens at the school, and they say we have video backing up. And according to the parents of this girl...
And you've seen the video?
I saw the video.
Okay.
According to the parents, Marissa calls them shortly after this happens because here's what happened. This teacher pushed her against the wall, told her she had to say the pledge. Marissa then gets sent to the principal's office, and Marissa basically was told by the principal... He basically gave her, like, a treat and said, like, why don't you go back to class or something?
Okay, so
like, we'll pretend this never happened.
Domesticated animal at this point.
It was bad.
Gave her, okay, you need to go into more about what the treat was.
I will find it while you talk.
Okay, so what we are dealing with is the fact that teachers think that pledging loyalty to a country is more important than their individual rights, which is...
It may have been a Rice Krispies treat. I'm not sure. But basically...
I mean, hey, listen, gang. A good Rice Krispies treat... I know we all know Rice Krispies treats are okay, but once in a while I get a really good Rice Krispies treat and it will make me forget the racial injustices that have happened against me.
Black Lives Matter, but not as much as
I want to be clear. I'm a white idiot.
You can clip this segment of the show for your podcasting Twitter needs.
No, we're trying to get paid for this dumb show.
This special needs teacher, she took Marissa to the principal's office. The principal said he'll review video footage, but never pointed out that Marissa's actions of not saying the pledge were legal. Didn't say that at any point. He offered her some treat. And then he sent her back to class. But the thing is, if he reviewed the footage, like, he hasn't made it public. He did not call her parents about it. He didn't tell them that, like, hey, listen, something happened at school. Your daughter didn't do anything wrong. He didn't tell the parents anything.
When you say the teacher pushed her up against the wall, can you explain that a little bit more?
That's it. I don't know what else to say
there. Is it like a forearm to her throat, or was it like two hands against her shoulders? It's really important.
From the video, I could see two hands. But again, it's a blurry video. It's hard to make out, which is why it's like... The video helps because this isn't just one girl saying this happened. You could see some physical contact. But again, the story is, what are you doing to this girl?
Yeah, what is this woman's goal?
And so anyway, the parents...
What's her damage?
It's been like months since this has happened.
Yeah.
And the only reason they're filing a lawsuit now is because basically they have tried every possible channel, the parents have, to try to just get the school to acknowledge this happened, that it was wrong, that it shouldn't have happened. Like, they weren't asking for anything more than like an apology, and they didn't get it. The school just won't contact them and won't respond to them at all. And that's why they're now filing a federal lawsuit.
I mean, it sounds, I've just been kind of deep into a true crime case about Boys on the Track, and it is wild what people in intermediate power will do to retain that intermediate power. Like, it's obvious, like, when you see somebody who's a senator or president or whatever, you're like, yeah, they're gonna try to like hold their shit together. But truly, like, fucking county council people are like, this is the most important job, and I'm willing to murder over my reputation. Like, these are the things that drive me crazy, is people's own ego and own desire for power outweighs children, animals, people with special needs, anything else, because people are fucking monsters.
Yeah.
People who want authority are monsters.
There is a racial element to all of this because the teacher is white and the student is black. I would point out this school, 73% of the students are white. And Marissa believes she was singled out because she was black. And she said at the press conference that her black friends have experienced similar feelings of racism, though this is the first story she knew of in her friend circle where a teacher physically attacked them.
Before you go on, I want to talk about that a little bit more. So my girl here has her little group who are also black, and they all talk in among themselves about...
And racism is just a part of their life.
It's just a part of their life. And I haven't had to deal with like the racial element of it, but I certainly know that feeling of having a group of girls who are like, you need to watch out for this guy. You need to look out for this behavior. This is the thing that women are always doing. Specifically, I have to presume women of color are just constantly looking out for each other and looking for danger. Because unfortunately, if you're not a white dude, danger is everywhere. You could, I don't know, be 15 and not recite the Pledge of Allegiance and you get physically assaulted.
They're suing the district and its leaders for being, quote, negligent, careless, reckless, and grossly negligent. They are saying that they violated...
negligent and grossly negligent?
Yes, wow. All different things under the law. They're saying the district violated Marissa's civil rights.
Yep.
And they're seeking whatever a court deems fit. I was curious, like, not that this was relevant to the story, but why doesn't she say the pledge? And they did answer that at the conference. Apparently, she stopped saying it in third grade when she realized for the first time, why are we saying we have liberty and justice for all in this country? Because we don't.
Certainly don't.
And so she stopped saying it for that reason.
That girl.
I was reminded, so a few years ago, I did a long podcast about the Pledge of Allegiance mm-hmm. and its history. And there was a story in there that I was shocked by because I had never heard it before. In 1916, there was an 11-year-old black child named Hubert Eaves, and he basically stopped saying the pledge for that exact reason. He said, isn't it wrong to have me bowing and worshiping a flag that is a dirty flag, one that does not give my mother and father protection,
a flag that
represents a government that allows Jim Crow cars, segregation in all public places in the South and other parts of the country, denies us a voice in state government, and who practices grandfather clauses and lets mobs take our people out and hang them without trial, show us no mercy in the courts, deny us the proper school education, disenfranchises our people, winks an eye at Southern concubinage, ostracizes us in every way. He was 11. He was arrested for not saying the pledge.
My good dude.
Yeah.
I bet he lived a long, healthy life and never was murdered early.
I hope so. But again, over 100 years ago, and basically what he said is, I'm not saying the pledge then for the same reason Marissa doesn't want to say.
What's his last name?
Eaves. Okay. But just a fascinating story. Wow. I don't know how this lawsuit will play out. It's hard to predict how these things will go, but... watching that press conference, man, this girl is poised. She knows what she's doing. Their lawyer also seems very much like he knows what he's doing here. So
hey,
I hope
what
that's the case.
You know what fucking blows is that girl's 11 and she deserves to have a child.
She's 15. Yeah.
Oh, Marissa wait, who's 11?
Hubert, the kid from 100 years ago.
She's 15. Okay, this is older. But truly, like, this isn't what she should be worrying about.
No kidding. She's 15. She's a freshman. Let her have her high school experience.
Hubert.
Not tainted by this. I'm going to jump to a story from the college football world. This involves Deion Sanders. Do you remember Deion Sanders?
Deion Sanders is definitely a name I know. I don't know if it's a man or a woman because Deion feels very gender neutral.
That answers our question.
Okay.
So here's the story. Like
so
I read, the only reason I really cared about this issue at all. Because I saw it a month ago, and then I'm like, yeah, whatever, it's not really on my radar. And then I see an editorial from a mostly right-wing newspaper called the Colorado Springs Gazette. Mm. And I'm like, oh, no, you're getting all of this wrong. Now I'm mad. So here's the backstory. There was a NFL player, Deion Sanders. He is a legend. He's a Hall of Famer. He's won 2 Super Bowls, Pro Bowl. You name the accolade in football, and he knows he's earned it.
What teams?
Oh, who cares? So
well, I do.
I don't know. A team. Jesus. I don't follow it that closely.
Okay, well, you can't give me shit for not knowing about sports. And then you're like, oh, you don't know who Deion Sanders is. And I say, who did Deion Sanders play for? And you're like, I don't know. Like, do
you
not...
wouldn't have guessed football even.
No, that's so, true. But that doesn't make you smarter
anyway,
than me.
Back in... It absolutely does.
Fuck yourself,
so,
Sanders.
Back in December, the University of Colorado hired him as the new head coach of their football team.
In Colorado.
He had been coaching at a different school. He helped that school do a big turnaround. And it turns out the University of Colorado's football team sucks. And so they're like, well, let's get this guy here because not only does he seem to know what he's doing.
49ers.
He's 49ers. So he's a big draw.
Cowboys.
It would be great for us. So this guy got a contract, $5 million a year. Which
this is Deion Sanders we're talking
Sanders,
about? Yep, I wasn't paying attention.
Typical for a college football coach, but a lot. $5 million a year. This team went 1-11 last season.
Yikes.
So now they're bringing him on to turn that around. They haven't won a bowl game in like 2 decades.
Well, they went, 9-10 1-10 last year. So I don't think a bowl is in their prospects.
Not yet.
Also, I don't understand how bowls work in college.
You have to do decently in the regular season,
and then maybe you get to
play
Tostito Bowl.
Yeah, and then you get some chips, and then you play your game, and then maybe you get some money, prestige, whatever.
Sure.
But basically,
and
even if
like,
Deion
it's the
Sanders
Cotton Bowl, Ball State University, go ahead.
Right. Even if he fails, though, like. Hiring him, having that name representing your campus is just good advertising for your school, basically.
Sure.
So, hasn't coached yet. The season hasn't started yet. Yep. And so right now, because it's March, he's still like building his staff, recruiting players for next season. That's what you do as a coach.
He hasn't called me.
Yeah, he'll get right on that.
Okay.
But we do have evidence, like, of course, people are interviewing him and his staff, and they want to know, how are you going to reshape this team? What are you going to do? In December, one assistant coach, according to a newspaper report, began a meeting for their team with a Christian prayer. Mm. Whatever. Okay, bad, oh, but not okay.
Oh, no, I understand.
Then in
we're
January,
talking about this.
Before a team meeting, and we have video of this, like, Sanders directed another coach to lead the team in another Christian prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Very explicitly Christian. It ends in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
That's not Christianity. Yeah, it just only Christianity. Mentions Christ.
So the thing is, like, it's one thing to praise God during your first press conference, which he absolutely did, but like, people would overlook that.
Making your team.
But making your team do it, obviously, sure. is a problem. And by the way, he did this at his old college, Jackson State, where he was coaching and where he built a reputation for actually being a good coach, not just a good player himself, where he had the team there start praying before games, like where they would say things like, repeat after me, Lord, I love you, Lord, I thank you, Lord, I magnify you, Lord, I glorify you.
And they stopped
without
losing.
You, I wouldn't be a thing.
And they never lost a game after.
They did better, but
oh, did
it's
they?
Not because of this.
Yeah.
But basically the message, the reason any of this is a problem is because even if they don't say it, if you're part of one of this guy's teams, you better be on board with his prayers. Because if you leave the huddle, even if he says, well, I'm not forcing you to be here, if you leave the huddle or remain silent or dare criticize any of this, saying Christian prayer shouldn't be a part of your coaching process, you might be branded as an athlete who's not a team player.
Mm.
That could lead to less playing time. It could hamper your future opportunities. And even if I couldn't point you to one student who has suffered consequences, like, there's a reason courts worry about religious coercion when it comes to adults at any public school leading or joining prayers. Like, that's true in high school. It applies to public colleges and universities. And here's the thing. Last year, there was a famous Supreme Court decision. We've talked about it here in a case called Bremerton, where basically they said a high school football coach who wanted to pray at midfield after games.
Mm-hmm.
The reason the Supreme Court, the conservatives on the court said, we're fine with that, is because they said, it's just a private prayer he's doing by himself
in the middle of a football field.
In the middle of a football field with cameras. And, yeah. And basically they're saying, look, he's not even inviting people to join him. And again, we can all argue, and we did, that that's still a coercive thing that he's doing.
Right.
But their argument was, that's a private prayer, regardless of how people are interpreting it. And that's why we're saying it's okay. The point
that's
being,
the Supreme Court
if Joe Kennedy at Bremerton said, before a game starts, I'm going to lead the team in a Christian prayer, there's a good chance he would not have gotten away with that. And yet, that is what Deion Sanders is doing right now. Doesn't matter that it's at a college. It's still the same rules.
Right.
So anyway.
Because it's a public college?
Public school, yeah. So in January, the Freedom From Religion Foundation wrote a letter to the university, to the chancellor, and basically said, it seems that in this case, Coach Sanders has not hired a Christian chaplain to impose religion on her players. He's done it himself, creating a Christian environment within his football programs that excludes non-Christian and non-religious players.
Okay.
Players trying to please their coach surely will feel immense pressure to participate in religious activities and go along with Coach Sanders proselytizing.
I feel like they didn't used to care about that.
Who?
Just people, the powers that be don't give a shit about Oh, you have to pretend to be Christian for a day. That's fine.
Well, it's still illegal. So that's what FFRF is saying. And he's saying courts have summarily rejected arguments that voluntariness excuses a constitutional violation.
Of course.
FFRF added, Coach Sanders' team is full of young and impressionable student athletes who would not risk giving up their scholarship, giving up playing time, or losing a good recommendation from the coach by speaking out or voluntarily opting out of his unconstitutional religious activities, even if they strongly disagreed with his beliefs.
Yeah.
Dot, dot, dot. Using a coaching position to promote Christianity amounts to religious coercion.
There it is.
They're not suing the school.
They got it.
They're not suing the school. FFRF is saying, look, the rules are already here. Maybe you don't know them.
Sure.
We're here to tell you what the rules are.
Yeah.
Don't make it happen. I should point out, there's a conservative legal group, First Liberty Institute. They sent a letter to the school saying, you guys, everything you're doing is fine.
Cool.
Because their
good
lawyers are not good.
Advice you're getting.
Anyway, guess what? FFRF's letter, it worked. Like, a week later, the university wrote back and basically said, I'm quoting here, the Office of Institutional Equity and Compliance personally met with Coach Sanders to provide guidance on the non-discrimination policies, Coach Sanders was very receptive to this training and came away with it with a better understanding of the university's policies and the requirements of the Establishment Clause. So basically, the school said,
I will believe that when I see it.
And that's the thing.
Good for them.
Good for them.
This feels like the best outcome of this.
And as far as FFRF is concerned, like, great, that settles our complaint. Great.
We're not mad at Deion Sanders. We're just expecting better from him.
Yeah, we're expecting better. But whatever the case, it's like, good, we warned you of the problem. You said, hey, we hear you and we fixed the problem. Mm. Great, problem solved unless we hear about it again. But at this point, we've laid a foundation that we see you doing something and we're calling
back
you out on
off.
It. And now if you do it again, it's like, now a court's going to be even more like, what you were warned about. Okay, anyway, we're not there yet. So anyway, that's where we're at with this case. That's why I thought this was a non-story.
Yeah.
All the time, there are coaches who do this sort of prayer in a huddle sort of thing. Maybe a group like FFRF says you can't do that. And then the school says, oh, you're right, we will stop. And that's the end of the story. Great. That's how it should end. In this case, the Colorado Springs Gazette newspaper this week, they posted an editorial. Here's the headline. Atheists order Deion Sanders to hide his heartfelt identity.
That is what we collectively do. We knock on the doors of Christians and we're like, keep it inside your own heart.
Yeah. Here's the first sentence of this editorial.
Oh boy.
Editorial, mind you, not stupid columnist who happened to write a bad opinion piece, because those are a dime a dozen.
I don't think we need editorials, but I think we need to be chiller about who we let write editorials.
We need to be chiller about who writes everything in a newspaper.
Yeah, that's fair.
And that's all the way from the best, biggest
we
papers.
We should just write everything.
That's what I do.
We're the only people with good opinions.
Yes, that's what I tell everybody in every piece.
Me
so,
too.
Here's the first sentence of the editorial.
Let's kick it.
Diversity must threaten the Freedom From Religion Foundation. The club's 15-member honorary board consists of only white anti-religionists. These self-righteous faux legal proselytizers want everyone to live and believe as they do.
He's acting hard.
Yeah. Here's, first of all, diversity threatens.
Diversity.
They're trying to make this into a racial thing, and it's not.
Isn't.
Then they pointed at their honorary board saying, well, they're all white, which it's weird that they pointed out the honorary board and not the actual board that which is definitely not all white.
Oh.
Then they say these.
All white thing is more of a condemnation of his school that he's
maybe.
At.
Maybe.
Okay.
The self-righteous faux legal proselytize. Like faux legal. They're not fake lawyers. What is that all about?
They're real, I think.
And most importantly,
you can't say faux legal. You can say like faux offended.
They're like, no one, FFRF did not say we need you to promote atheism. They're not asking everyone to live and believe as they do. They said, hey, you can't push Christianity. We're not asking you to push atheism. Mm. We're saying just keep that to yourself or find a way to do it in a neutral way.
Well, there's a group of people who think that if they don't get to do whatever they want to do, it's oppression. Is this group of people?
The editorial board? Mm. Yes. Here's what they went on to say. Mm-hmm. It is no surprise. This outfit, FFRF, wants national treasure Deion Sanders to behave as they dictate. They want the NFL Hall of Famer and former pro baseball player to shut up and coach.
Baseball player, that's where I knew him from.
Yeah. Shut up and coach. They demand he suppress something central to his being, a trait no less important than his racial identity.
But if I talk about my period, everyone's like, gross, stop it, stop it, stop it.
Even though
hate
that's core to who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the thing. They're like, first of all, they want the player to shut up and coach. Laura Ingram famously told LeBron James to shut up and dribble when he was reacting to George Floyd. And obviously, horrible thing to say to him. Mm. And these people are like, oh, FFRF is telling Deion Sanders, shut up and coach. That's not even close to an interpretation of what FFRF said. They said, no, you can coach and you could be a Christian. You just can't merge those two worlds in a coercive
way.
You can't
tell me that a right-wing person is misrepresenting facts, Hammond. Yeah. I've never heard of it and I shan't.
Yes. Then they go on to highlight how white the University of Colorado is and like basically to say,
yeah, dog, it's Colorado. I don't know what to tell you.
And then here's my favorite part about this editorial. They say nearly 60% of Boulder residents identify as no religion. Non-denominational Christians are such an anomaly, they show up as 0% on surveys. A Gallup poll ranks Boulder the second least religious city in the United States. The hiring of an iconic, universally respected black man with a household name has ignited hope for mitigating Boulder's diversity problem. Saying Deion Sanders is the answer
what
to our racist
fuck
city.
Are you
and
saying
this is in response? I might remind
so
you to FFRF
people,
saying don't proselytize to
so
your kids.
So few people believe in God in Boulder that their only option was to bring in a apparently famous Christian, which I
yes.
didn't know.
That is their argument. You're
thing.
Hurting diversity because you're mad at a black guy, which you're not allowed to do, apparently, and he happens to be a Christian, which would diversify. The University of Colorado. Because if I want to look for a place where no Christians exist, right. it's Colorado,
truly.
Home of Colorado Springs.
I mean, my husband and I and our dog were in Colorado a couple of years ago, and we went through Boulder a bunch, and it's a fucking dope ass little town. It's great. Did we drive by the JonBenet Ramsey house? We did. I don't feel amazing about
that
it.
Tracks.
But Boulder is great, and it's pretty fucking hysterical for somebody to be like, this new person bothers me not because because he's Christian and like you're anti-Christian, you're not racist. He's like, I'm not gonna accuse Boulder of being racist. That would be out of pocket. I'm going to accuse them of being anti-Christian, which is...
They're going back and forth in this editorial. They're doing everything.
As if there is any group of humans in the United States besides, like, dumb people like us who are, like, quote-unquote anti-Christian. Yeah. And, like, we're not anti-Christian, but, like, this idea that people think there's a boogeyman around every church corner is so fucking funny to me. Of, like, you need to think up your own villain, because otherwise you have to realize the reality is you're the villain.
I'm going to add one more thing, then I'll summarize this whole thing. But like the editors here kept writing, Deion Sanders should not and does not coerce prayer or acceptance of his faith by anyone on campus. Mm-hmm. And then they basically said, this is college football, damn it. Coaches win or get fired. Basically saying, if you're good on the team, you're going to play. Why would we punish you just because you're not going along with the prayers? And
these
then
are
they
people
added,
who deeply have a different point of view than me.
And then they added, Sanders adds to Boulder's racial and religious diversity. And that is a good thing. He is through and through a black man who openly worships God.
Jesus
basically
Christ.
Trying to make FFRF's harmless letter, which the university said, yeah, you're right, yeah. we're going to fix this, into some sort of attack on who he is.
An anti-racial
And by the
attack.
Way, if Deion Sanders is your answer to racism, I just want to point out that, do you know what you could do with $5 million?
Tell me.
Here's a thought. You could spend like $2 million hiring tons of professors of color and then spend $3 million a year on scholarships for students of color to come to your school.
Yeah, but how many football games would that win?
I'm pretty sure they would do better than 1-11.
Okay.
I'll kick a football 10
heaven.
Yards,
oh,
maybe.
Oh, my friend. No, you
Whatever.
Won't. You won't and you can't and you shan't.
There are other ways to get attention than a football team. But the point is, Deion Sanders isn't your solution to racism. There
no,
are better solutions to racism.
This is fucking miserable. This is people pinning anti-Christianity when they're really being racist.
And,
are we almost done? I have to pee so
no.
bad.
So you can go. I'll keep talking. Here's what the editorial board doesn't get. Like, coercion isn't just about benching someone who doesn't pray or to, like, use language they would understand. You don't have to wear a KKK hood to be a racist. The fear is that a student who doesn't pray could be ostracized by teammates. They are looked down upon by the coaches. It's not a direct, you're not participating in the prayer huddle, so you're not going to be in the big game or participate in the big play. It's that it's the sort of thing that can snowball into something much, much worse. Like, and the thing about college football is that they may have a couple of star players who are always going to play because they're that good, but most of any college team consists of a lot of very good players who are on the cusp of being great. I mean, they were all like standout stars in high school, and they need as many chances as possible to prove themselves to people who can make or break their careers. And so if you're one of those, like, not the superstar athlete, but a really good player on the team, and you don't want to go along with the crowd, that is the sort of thing that could hurt you. And they don't have a $5 million contract to fall back on.
Yeah, me too. That's what I was going to say. Was everything.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
Anyway, so that editorial was horrible. I mean, I should say, for now, Deion Sanders seems to be on the right page saying, I'm not going to do this again. Mm. The school seems to be on the right page saying, yeah, we talked to him. He's not going to do it again. Mm. We'll see if that pans out. The only people who seem to be mad about this right now are the editorial people at the Gazette who seem to think this is all a big attack from atheists on a black guy who got hired to be a football
coach.
Yeah,
but all conservative news outlets have to do is be offended. Like, that's all they do. They don't do anything positive. They only absorb and reflect negative.
That editorial made me mad.
What? Really? I couldn't tell about your opinion.
Let's talk about this Catholic diocese in Santa Rosa in California. This week, they declared bankruptcy. Why? Because of a, quote, staggering number of sexual abuse cases against church leaders.
Staggering
is the word they
used.
Big
word.
Yeah. And here's what you need to know. In 2019, the California legislature, overwhelmingly Democrats, they passed a bill opening up a 3-year window for adults to file lawsuits relating to childhood sexual abuse.
And that's been pretty common around the
country.
It's
been happening by a lot of Democrats.
Pennsylvania, I think most famously, were like, hey, let us know what the Catholic Church did. And everyone's like, hey, we have the receipts.
Well, basically what they said is a lot of people were abused as children, but they didn't realize it or come to terms with it until much later in life. But by that time, it's too late for you to file any lawsuit because of the way the laws stand. But we're more adept at discussing sexual abuse these days than ever before.
And our understanding of what sexual abuse is has evolved in
an
important way.
People may not recognize the harm it did to them until several years after the incident in question. So in California, they said, look, in 2019, we're going to open a 3-year window for anybody who's been affected to go ahead and sue if they want to. And so at the time, I should point out, the Catholic leaders in California argued that the law was unconstitutional.
Because
they didn't like it because they knew it would come after them.
Sure.
But basically that window, the law passed. The window was opened from January 1st, 2020 to December 31st, 2022.
Like,
that was your 3-year window.
There,
yep. So. I mean, I thought about the pandemic. It seems irrelevant here, but the point is, like, that was 3-year window. It is done. But here's the thing: in December, as that window is on the verge of closing, the bishop of the Santa Rosa diocese announced, "You guys, I don't think this is going to look good for us." He basically said,
"Our diocese, Catholic Church writ large,
our diocese." Okay. Bishop Robert Vasa described bankruptcy as the inevitable result of an insurmountable number of claims, about 130, dating back to 1962 when the diocese was founded.
Wow.
Basically saying, already in the 3-year window, there are 130 lawsuits against the Catholic churches that we oversee. Yeah. And I just want to point out, that sounds like let's do a victory lap because they seem to be dying out here, this Catholic diocese. But bankruptcy is actually the easy way out for them because, as critics have said, if this Catholic diocese declares bankruptcy, that means the Catholic leaders can postpone or avoid depositions.
Yep.
There is, they can delay discovery in lawsuits that might uncover past misdeeds. It also limits how much money can go to victims because a court will say, well, these are all your assets. It's worth this much. We'll divvy it up amongst the plaintiffs and stuff like that, as opposed to right now when they might have a lot more at their disposal. Like, and even if the diocese shuts down, the churches underneath might still remain open. So, like, you're closing the entity at the top.
Right.
But, like, you're not shutting down all the things at the bottom. So, like, that's the thing. Even if you shut down the diocese, it doesn't affect the actual churches or schools necessarily. And anyway, that's what they said in December. By declaring bankruptcy, it also allowed those church officials to just refuse to accept responsibility for abuse and cover-ups that occurred when they were in charge.
Wait, because if they declare bankruptcy,
Then they're just saying, like, we can't afford to fight all these lawsuits. Okay. So, like, we're throwing our hands up in the air.
Account.
Yep.
They may or may not be shut down, but yep. certainly nobody is called out.
And if they declare bankruptcy, it cuts off anybody who hasn't filed a lawsuit during that window of time. No new people can file lawsuits.
Are you saying that capitalism is bad for justice? Because I've never heard anything.
So that's what happened in December as that window was closing.
Okay, this past December?
By the way, they thought it was like 100, what did they say, 130 claims? It actually turned out to be 222.
Bing bong.
Yeah, that's the final number. And now this week, they the diocese...
Can I give them some advice?
Yeah.
They should not... sexually abuse people as much as
that is very good advice.
Thank you.
So on last week,
I'm doing a lecture circuit about
the diocese said, yeah, we're gonna declare bankruptcy. He said these cases are too numerous to settle individually, and they have accumulated until the closing of the three-year window. Mm-hmm. Now that the window is closed, we have received notice of at least 160 claims, and we basically have information that like more than 200 claims have been filed. It was 222.
Oops.
But what that means is a couple decades ago when they did not declare bankruptcy, but and we, like the Boston Globe and the Spotlight people did their investigation, when all this began with fewer lawsuits filed against them, they had to pay out $12 million with an additional $19 million coming from insurance. That was like 20 years ago. And to pay all that, they had to sell off property, they had to borrow money. And what the bishop is saying now is we have no more property to sell in our diocese, very little insurance coverage available, and all these cases are brand new.
Like,
we don't have the money to give you, that's why we're declaring bankruptcy. I should just point out, like, maybe the diocese is declaring bankruptcy. The Catholic Church is doing fine.
That's the thing I don't understand is this sort of financial
connection. You can't
sue
the Vatican for what this diocese is doing.
Right, of course. But if this diocese declares bankruptcy, is there anybody over them who is held responsible for their financial
It's
irresponsibility?
Own, it's like one bank going under and then everyone's saying, well, sucks for that bank. We're all doing just fine. Don't come after us. Don't
look
over
here. Well, that's
definitely
not happened in the last week or so
not
I'm not
all.
Sure what you're talking about.
Yep.
Everything's fine and good. That's what I like, is things are fine and good.
So I should say one newspaper pointed out, just to put this in perspective, at least 32 dioceses and archdioceses in the United States and its territories have sought bankruptcy protection since 2004. 32 dioceses.
Shit.
And one, the Stockton Diocese in a different part of California, came out of bankruptcy in 2017 with a plan to settle with sex abuse case lawsuits with 27 survivors for $15 million. That was after they did all this stuff. So, I mean, no wonder they're doing it. Again, are they going to get off easy because of this?
Of course.
Yes. No one's going to go to jail.
No.
The churches and the Catholic schools will still exist when all this is over, unless a lawsuit goes after those institutions specifically. It's a cop-out. I guess if there's any upside, it's that the victims who go through the court procedure and all that, they'll get some kind of justice, but only because a secular government took the moral high road, even though the religious institutions kept opposing it every step of the way.
Oof.
All right, I got one last story for
Jesus.
You today, and I'm setting aside like four other stories, but this one was too important.
Hour and a half already?
Oh, we are so far beyond
sleepy.
Everything. This happened in Vermont this week, and
Bernie Sanders, Vermont,
and what happened here is that there's a school called Mid Vermont Christian School.
Okay.
Fine. And they have their athletes, and they were playing in the girls' basketball tournament in the state. They're a Division IV school. Fine, whatever. They're in the Division IV bracket. And basically, the way it works in their state is a handful of schools get, because of their regular season record, you get put in the bracket, and you try to compete against each other for a state championship.
Mm-hmm.
Not too different from, like, the March Madness stuff we're seeing right now. Mm-hmm. So they were a 12 seed. they were slated to play the team that was number five. That's okay. The way their bracket worked. This is late February.
They're playing a team that's better than them.
They are playing a team that's better than them by record.
I'm just helping our non-athletic friends.
This is a normal thing that happens all the time. And by the way, a lot of private Christian schools in many states will ask like the state athletic associations, like, we want permission to play in these tournaments. And we'll abide by all your rules and everything, but like, that's the best competition we can give to our students, because what are the other options, right? So that's not weird at all. Vermont lets them do it. So they were a 12 seed. They were going to play the number five school, and before the game started, they forfeited the game. The Christian school forfeited the game.
Okay.
Why? Because the other team...
They had a woman.
Had a trans athlete on the team.
Oh, no.
So here's what the head... This is what the head of the Christian school said.
Trans dude or trans girl?
It's an all-girls team. So they had a trans woman on the team.
A trans woman on the team.
And so the head of the school, Vicky Fogg, she made this statement. We withdrew from the tournament because we believe playing against an opponent with a biological male jeopardizes the fairness of the game and the safety of our players. I am not sure where the safety thing is coming from at all.
Wait, I'm sorry, what?
She said it was
high school?
Yeah, high school. And then she added, allowing biological males to participate in women's sports sets a bad precedent for the future of women's sports in general.
Can I?
No,
I have
got a long way to go.
I have an opinion.
Yes.
And I genuinely had an argument with my husband's like boss's boss because I have really good ideas all the time. I think that as a society, and I'm going to say especially Americans because that's all I can say, maybe our obsession with winning is the worst part of our society, because I think about, Hemant, if you've heard me talk about this, but I work with horses. Have you heard me talk about this? I've been riding since I was 10 years old, and I never, ever, ever, ever competed in any meaning of the word competition. And I am so grateful for that fact, because I played softball a lot. And what I remember from playing softball as a kid is my dad making me cry when I would drop things and shit like that. So I have a million problems with this story that we're about to tell. But I think my main thing is this idea of, if it's quote unquote unfair and it's not an equal competition amongst high schoolers, that's a bad thing. And like, maybe we should teach kids that instead of playing to win, we should play to love the things that we do.
And that point, I think, is worth reiterating, because again, this is high school sports. It's not professional. It's meant to be fun. It's meant to celebrate the journey more than the outcomes. Mm-hmm. And to say like, well, this is going to hurt women's sports, it's like, buddy, it's middle school. Let the trans kid play. But whatever, it's high school. Let the trans kid play. To be clear, the school that the trans student is playing for had no problem with it. The schools they were playing against, except for this one, had no problem with it. It's just this one school. And by the way, for anyone who's interested, as research has shown, there is no consistent evidence showing that trans athletes have a competitive advantage. But that's besides the point here. The point is, like, for all the concern about the threat to women's sports, by forfeiting the game, the Christian school denied all the girls on their team and the other team to display their skills on the court. That strikes me as much more of a threat to women's sports, not giving them the chance to compete in a pressure-packed competitive game and let the chips fall where they may. I would also point out that the Christian school forfeited the game. Long Trail won the game. Mm-hmm. They lost their next game. It happens. That's the way this stuff happens.
Well, we've seen this before not with trans athletes, but specifically, I know we talked about a story of a wrestling team that a girl was on the wrestling team and this Christian...
Had nothing to do with trans athletes whatsoever. A girl who was on the wrestling squad because she wanted to wrestle.
It is just an example of how, like, the gender dynamics of everything are only hurting children.
Yeah.
Right? Like, what is the best case scenario result of this?
Yeah. Well, here's the good news. There is a good news. This is, I'm ending on a high note here.
This is unusual and uncomfortable. I know.
The Vermont's Principals Association, which is the group that oversees athletic competition like these throughout the state.
Okay.
They said, well, we have policies in our association that are inclusive. We have a no-tolerance policy when it comes to discrimination based on a student's actual or perceived sex and gender. Mm. And so they didn't know about what the issue was until after the team had already forfeited. They found out after the fact.
Okay.
So they're like, well, look, we don't have to take, like, in the moment, we don't have to do anything because the Christian team has already forfeited the game. They're out of the tournament. The other team is moving on. So, okay, we could take our time and make sure we get this right. And this week, 2 weeks later, they have now made it official. Mid-Vermont Christian School is banned from participating in any VPA-sponsored athletic events. Like, the Christian school cannot participate in any of their athletic competitions moving forward.
Are you telling me there were consequences for the...
For the Christian school that was transphobic. Yep.
A
unanimous vote of the 15...
Good job, Bernie Sanders, question mark?
It's a unanimous vote of the 15-member executive committee. Wasn't even a hard call. Like, state law forbids discrimination against trans athletes. But it's kind of nice to still see the Athletic Association do the right thing and not cave to, like, bigot demands. And I love this quotation from the executive director. His name is Jay Nichols. He said, if you don't want to follow VPA rules... That's fine, but then you're not a VPA member.
These are, like, the things I love when people are really straightforward about, like, these are our rules. If you don't meet
you
those
agreed
rules,
to the rules when you wanted to join our competition.
You don't get to decide what we believe
Which,
in.
By the way, this is also the same thing. This is what we've talked about when, like, let's say a team with... like a Seventh-day Adventist school wants to play in a basketball tournament in the same way. We want to compete in the public statewide tournament, but also we can't play on, like, Saturdays until Sunday, whatever the rule is. Basically, the response should always be, our schedule and our rules were given to you in advance.
Yeah.
You know what you're getting into, and you agreed to it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say, whatever your reason is, we don't care that it's religious, if you say we can't play on that day, fine, you're out of the tournament. That's how it works.
I mean,
this school says we're not going to play because that other school has a trans athlete, then your school can't compete. By the way, that school, for all its concern about athletics and, like, giving kids this opportunity, well, they just screwed all of their students out of competition in an actual pressure-packed environment for the foreseeable future. I should say they plan to appeal the decision, but I'm not sure under what grounds, really.
Truly.
Because...
Especially if the anti-trans shit is in the state.
It's in the state constitution, and it's the association's rule. They're not... I should be clear.
It sounds
they
like...
are not being punished for their Christian beliefs. They're being kicked out of an association for breaking a rule that amounted to nothing more than, you know, be decent humans.
Yeah. Bad for them. I'm sorry about their students, but you know what? These are the lessons we learn, is the truly, like, the choices that the adults in our life make reflect down on us, on the younger people, and we have to figure out what that's going to look like when we're the adults.
And I think it's worth praising, like, this team from Long Trail that was fine with having a trans athlete on the team, and all the other teams that were like, all right, we got to play this tough team. Mm-hmm. Let's see what we could do. I hope we beat them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they took it as a competitive situation and they did what they did. Like, not everyone has to be bigoted, but, like, I know it's frustrating when, like, one school with a bigot who's their leader kind of steals all the attention. But, man, everyone else involved in this situation did pretty much the right thing, which is so nice to see.
There's one film. In here. And
all right, I'll pause
that's
there.
That's good. Holy cow, this is quite an episode, eh?
Story and a half.
I have some shit for bonus episode. I just finished the show Sandman.
Okay.
On Netflix. I really liked it. I'm reading a book called Lessons in Chemistry, and I did cry today at a bar while reading that book. Scotty, our new horse, I'm obsessed with, and I only want to talk about him. Next thing is I brought you and your family out to dinner.
I went outside the house.
And I want to talk about it because it was so fun, and I'm obsessed with your kids. Finally, quickly, a show called Intelligence, starring David Schwimmer and fuck, I can't think of his name, but he's Nate from Ted Lasso. Mm-hmm. I just watched a doc about Malaysian Air Flight 370. I bought a friend of mine a book because of all of my white guilt. That's the end of the things I want to talk about later.
White guilt. Got it.
Literally only on my
notes
it says white guilt
to explain
book.
White
it's
guilt.
It's going to be great.
You can find me at Hemant Mehta on Twitter. Please go to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast to support the show.
You can always find me on Twitter at Jess Blumke. You can leave a review on iTunes. You can email us at friendlyatheistpodcast@gmail.com. We love to hear from you and usually read the shit. Anything else you got for us, bud?
Hey, we have a Discord. We have a Facebook page. Those links are in the show notes. And this is also on YouTube.
Yeah,
if you like that.
I appreciate you listening to this. It's a weird, dumb show that I love that you listen to.
Yay.
It's fun.
We'll see you next week. Bye.
Goodbye.